Okay, welcome everyone. It's wow, we got a nice showing right here at the beginning tonight. Yasher Koach, everyone. I see a full screen in front of me. So welcome Toby, Gloria, Marina, Henry, Arthur, Bobby and Zadie, John, Oliver, Phyllis, Erwin, and Melissa. I feel like the Havel Alpiadel is like I'm just like listing off the names of Haman's sons. I do all one breath. But the opposite of Haman's sons. So wonderful to see all of you. We find ourselves on Yud Ches Amud Beis on 18b. And if you look only a few blot ahead, you'll see that on 21a, on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, we finished the perek. So we're almost done with the second perek, and we hardly just started. So God willing, we should finish that sometime, I guess. Let's see, early September. God willing, in early September. Okay, so previously on Maseches Megillah, we were going through, we're just basically doing what the Gemara does, which is going through every line, every word of the Mishnah, and trying to make sense of it. So last time we left off on the bottom of Yud Ches Amud Aleph and the top of Yud Ches Amud Beis, we were talking about Seirugin. So Seirugin meant, if I read a few psukim here, I stop, I take a sip of coffee, and take a break, and then I continue reading afterwards. The example I gave from back in my days in Shalavim was they would start singing, na 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 na, hey, good, when Haman got hanged at the end. And I always wondered, I was sitting there, aside from the fact that I'm like, I just want to break my fast already. Also, I was wondering if halakhically it constituted a hefsek. So the answer is that probably it was okay b'di'evad. Why? Because even according to Rav Mona, who we learned last time, he says, af b'seirugin im shakadei ligmor skula. Yet you only have to repeat the Megillah. It's only a significant enough of an interruption if the amount of time that elapsed was the same amount of time it would have taken to read the Megillah all the way from the beginning until the end of the Megillah, from the beginning of the first chapter all the way to the end of the final chapter. Now, the Gemara here is just at the beginning. We're kind of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines down from the top. I would reckon it's still in the first section of Art Scroll. And I think so. And so the Gemara is going to actually pick up on something technical. We had a debate. Can you wait? In theory, you could wait until B'yas Kol Tzedek. You wait till Mashiach comes. And it's still okay as long as you pick it up at some point. Or like Ramona says, no, there's a time limit. And if the time limit elapses, you wait too long, you'll have to start the Megillah all over again. Those who are learning Hilchos Brachos with us now, this may sound a little familiar. Okay, so Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba, Amar Rav Halacha K'Rabbi Mona. So some rabbis say the halachic position is with Rabbi Mona. But Shmuel Amar Ain Halacha K'Rabbi Mona. So Shmuel says halacha is not in accordance with them. So Basura Masu Hafi. That's what they taught in Surah, because this happens all the time. You have earlier rabbis debating. Later rabbis have to come along and say, okay, this was a gewaltige, machlekes. We enjoyed the sugya. We came to the Gemara here, but now we need no tachlis. Halach lemaisa, practically, who do we paskin like? Who do we rule in accordance with? So that's one version of it. The second version is only going to differ slightly based on who the first rabbi is. But who masnu haki, amarav kahana, amarav halachik rabbi mona. Just a different rabbi at the beginning, but same idea. Some people think that we do pass like Ramona, that there is a time limit on how much you can stop, how much time can elapse when reading the Megillah. Some say, no, we don't pass like him, no need to worry. Third version of how this goes down, and this is how we conclude. Rabbi Masni Ipcha, Rav Amar in halacha k'Rabbi Mona, Ushmul Amar halacha k'Rabbi Mona. So, okay. That he just reverses who actually paskins like Rabbi Mona and who doesn't paskin in accordance with him. Rabbi Yosef, not good to Rabbi Bibi Adecha. You should paskin. We should paskin. As you know, we're paskining the paskining because even within the Pesach, we now have an argument of the version of how we paskin that. So it's like two tiers down, right? The first stage was Rabbi Mona versus the Chachamim. And then we have Rav and Shmuel arguing about if we pass the like Ramona or the Chachamim. And but we have different versions of the Machlokas of who we pass like. So it just takes a little deeper down the rabbit hole. So we hold like Rabbi's version, take his version, the Shmuel the Chayesh Lakidah. Now, why this, right? It seems arbitrary. Why would we take the third version of how this Machlokas goes down? Because Shmuel is concerned for minority opinions. This really should be, I should have actually looked into this a little more, but it sounds a little similar to Rabbi Meir, who is Chayesh Lemiyuta, that Rabbi Meir was Koshish Lemiyuta. He was concerned for minorities. There might be something to connect over there. So Shmuel basically says that we should take minority opinions into serious consideration. So therefore, since Shmuel is the one who takes minorities into serious consideration, therefore it would be he who would be concerned for the opinion of Rabbi Mona and would pass in lo chumra. He would rule stringently out of concern for Rabbi Mona's position. So how do we know? Where do we come up with this? This idea that Shmuel is concerned for the stringent minority opinion. It's none. So now we need to reintroduce a concept. This is a concept we've seen before in the Gemara. I'm not sure if we've seen it in Megillah yet, but we've definitely seen it a lot in Makos and other Shirmits come up, which is the concept of Yibam. So just really, really quick refresher. So in Yibam, what happens is man and woman are married. So man dies and he has a brother, but he did not leave any children in this world. There's a mitzvah of Yibam for the brother to marry the widow now, which is his sister-in-law. And in order to perpetuate the line of his brother, who unfortunately died before his time. So what happens though is that there's something called a zika, which is a relationship between the widow and her brother-in-law. So even before he decides whether to marry her through Yibam or whether to sever any connection with her through Chalitza, which is the ritual of spitting with the boot, he still has automatically this thing called a Zika relationship with her. So now why is it important to know that he has an automatic relationship with her? D'etnan shomeres yavam shekidesh achiv es achusa. So what happens is, let's say this widow, she has a sister who is single. And so one of the brothers of the deceased goes ahead and betroths the sister of the widow. Now remember, he has a mitzvah of Yibam vis-a-vis the widow, but instead he decides, I don't want the widow, I want her sister. So what do we do in a case like this? Shekish achiv achosa. So we tell him, wait a moment. Wait until your other brother, wait until, it could be your older brother. There's a little bit of discussion if the word gadol is dafka or not. Wait until your older brother goes ahead and betroths her, and then you will be allowed to marry her sister. Amar Shmuel halacha Yehuda ben Beseira, and we see Shmuel says the halacha is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. So what exactly is the machlokes here? Rashi gives us a little bit more background. What happens is that when there's only one surviving brother, then automatically the surviving brother has a Zika relationship with the widow, and he's not allowed to marry her sister unless he decides to do chalitza with her first. The question is when there are multiple brothers that are left behind. So, according to the Chachamim, the mainstream opinion, Rashi says, "Upligi," since there are at least two brothers left in this world, "Ein zi kasam yuchedes lios muteles al echad mehen lios keishto umuter ba'achosa." Since it's kind of like the diffusion of responsibility principle, since we can't peg it on either of them. Who's to say Reuven should marry her? Maybe his brother Shimon should be the one to marry her. So the Chachamim say there's no Zika relationship there. Therefore, they're welcome to go marry the widow's sister, should they choose to do so. However, Yehuda ben Bezerra says, no, the same way if there's only one surviving brother, there'd be a Zika, so too if there's two surviving brothers, they also are considered to have this pseudo-relationship with the widow, and they must either do Yibam or Chalitza, and then once that's resolved, then that's when the sister of the widow becomes available to them. So whatever we got from there, hopefully, tried my best on that one. Yivamos is always very, for Daf Yomi folks, is very notorious. Generally, I think the Art School Mishnahs are very famous for all their different family charts they have in there. It's very important. You guys remember when we did Rishia Bar Rishia back in Makos? Remember there was that case where basically we're trying to prove that you could violate multiple Isurim at one time. So it was, I don't remember. It's like the son then goes and has a child with his mother, and then he has a child from the child of his mother. And it's like this whole complicated thing. So that way he's like violating like a million Isurim at one time. So I remember we needed like charts for that one. Anyway, the bottom line is, Rahidu ben Misera is a minority stringent opinion. Shmuel says we should be concerned for him, even though he's the minority, even though he's a Das Yachid. And so we see, since Shmuel, generally, his halachic methodology is to be concerned and to lend credence to these minority stringent opinions, it makes sense here that he would also be concerned for Ramona, who told us that there's actually a time limit to how long you could pause while reading the Megillah. End of that section. Let me take a moment. I could pause. Anything I could clarify on that?
Actually, I have a couple questions.
This
is Paul on the phone. I have a question.
Oh, Paul, good to hear from you.
Thank you.
From the
what about half-brothers? What about half-brothers?
Yeah, give me the... Yeah, what's the case here?
Well, brother has... The brother's parents, one of the parents remarried.
Yeah.
So he's got a half brother. Is it incumbent on the half brother to also do Yibum? And then the second question I have is, what if the widow declines the marriage? Does he still have to do Chalitza?
Yeah. Yeah, they still do a Chalitza, even if she declines. In fact, by the way, nowadays, we automatically decline. Because people were just misusing the system, it wasn't being done right. And basically, we automatically resort to chalitza, even if both parties are willing. Svardim, by the way, some Svardim actually maintain, and I think Rav Avadia actually posits like this, someone could look it up and confirm, that in theory, Svardim have the option to do Yibam today, but Ashkenaz and Pesach, we have Paskin that we do not do chalitza. We only do chalitza now. In terms of half brother, I'm not remembering offhand. Anyone done Yevamos recently? Remember the din of half brothers? I don't remember offhand. It's a good question. I have no doubt that it's actually addressed somewhere in that huge Masechta, but alas, I don't know off the top of my head. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Shkoyach. Okay. So the good news is the rest of the Gemara is relatively smooth sailing. So in case your head is still spinning from our little foray into Yevamos, the rest of this should hopefully be a straight shot. But nonetheless, it's going to be less complicated, I think, but also it's going to be much more practical. Most of the Gemara we're going to be doing from here on actually has very practical ramifications. And I'll try to tell you some of the halakha lemaase as we do it. Tana Rabbanan, Hishmet ba sofer osios opsukin ukaran Hakore Kimiturgam and Targum Yotza. The Braisa that teaches us, let's say the Megillah is missing. The Sofer didn't do a good job. Remember, I told you about our Sefer Torah incident. So let's say the Sofer messed up, and here he didn't write the wrong word per se, but he left out a few letters here. He left out a pasuk over there. He did a sloppy job, but the majority of the Megillah is still intact. And again, you have someone. Who, I mean, basically anyone who can lay in the Megillah, I mean, okay, I can't actually say this, but my sense is anyone who lays the Megillah has put in so much practice that, you know, if you take out one pasuk, they may automatically be able to just read. I forget, Henry, are you a Megillah reader?
Occasionally.
Right? If I took a pasuk out, like, would you automatically from memory just, like, still read it anyway? Is that, like, a normal thing? Maybe. Okay. Huh? Yeah. Well, okay. We always use Nat Sandberg as the example who reads it at least 10 times.
Yeah, Nat for sure could.
Nat can just read about that. So if you read a pasuk here, a pasuk there, baal peh, you read it out loud, you read it by heart, that is okay. Ay, mesve, but we have a contradiction. Hayuba osios metushkashos omukros im reshuma nikar ksher v'la psula. We have a brace which tells us that if some of the letters are torn up, they've been smudged away, whatever issue might happen to it, as long as their impression is still there, you can kind of see it somewhat, then it's kosher. What does that imply? That implies that if the letter was completely erased, then even a few letters here and there, the Megillah is invalidated, the Megillah is puzzled. So how do we reconcile this with the first brisa, which tells us that even if it's missing a few letters here and there, it's still kosher? Lo kashya habakul habamiksasa. The second brisa is referring to when all the letters are problematic, whereas the first brisa saying a few letters here and there are missing. So a few letters
here and there is different from a sefer. That's very different from a sefer Torah.
Very different than a sefer Torah. That's true. That's true. So we learned last week there is a tshuva of the Rambam, which every rabbi and gabbai needs to keep in his back pocket, which says that you can actually be yotze Torah reading from a pasul sefer Torah. We only use that b'di'eved in a case of suffix. So if I'm laning and we find an issue a potential issue in the sefer Torah, so since this is basically what we do, we say, well, it's a suffix. It's doubtful if it's pasul. And even if it is possible, I still have, we're talking about minority opinions, right? I have the Das Yachid of the Rambam, the Rambam's opinion that even a possible Sefer Torah is kosher. Now, if we know 100% that a Sefer Torah is possible, then we just have no choice. You can't, once you know that, we just switch to Sefer Torah at that point. Okay. Now, okay, moving forward. Rabbanon. Here it's not where the sofer left out words, but let's say you are reading the Megillah to yourself, because if you're reading in front of a whole room and no one catches that you missed the pasuk, we got bigger problems over here. So you notice at some point that you missed a pasuk, you can't say to yourself, you know what? I'm already in the ninth parag. Let me just, skim through this and then I'll catch that pasuk later. That works for Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum, by the way, but it doesn't work for Megillah. Similarly, Nichnas Abisak Neses, who mustn't see where Shakaru Chetzia. Let's say you come late, if there's like one night you don't want to come late to Shul, it's when they're laning Megillah, right? Because you come in and they're already up to the fifth parag in the Megillah. Lo yomar ekra chatzia imetzibor v'akrach ekra chatzia. You can't say, you know what? I'll hear the latter half with the tzibor, and then I'll catch the first half later. Ela kovrei osam etchilas v'atzofa, because you have to read it from the beginning all the way to the end, and that's a general theme that we have. Because again, the Megillah is telling us a narrative; it's telling us a story, and if you miss part of it, you've missed all of it. Okay. Any questions? I hope you never have to come in late. That's like the worst thing, right? Megillah, you come in like one minute late. That's it. You're already gone. You're already done for. So very important. Moving on. Misnamnim is an important one. Dozing off during the Megillah. That's a tough one, guys, right? I'm just going to speak for myself over here. I can see from the expressions on your faces that you've been in a similar situation. It's pretty tough. I mean, look, think about it. Even laning on Shabbos, paying attention for a full aliyah already is a feat unto itself. But sitting down for the Megillah, now, arguably, I'm not a huge fan, as you know, of making noise during humming. I like to do a straight shot. But I can understand, actually, because it kind of gives you like a chance to gulp and come up for air. That way, when everyone's going crazy at Haman, you can like just rest your eyes, catch your breath, and then, go back right in. So I hear that. So let's say someone dozes off during Megillah. We say he's yotze. So what's your yotze by doing that? To what degree do you have to be conscious in order to be yotze? Hei chidami. You're sort of asleep, you're sort of awake. Shkoyach, what does that mean? So, yeah, Toby?
Before you go any further, isn't this Gemara talking about the reader, not the people who are listening?
Yes, that I was gonna mention that at the end, but you are correct based on the Shulchan Aruch there. It's based on the reader. Let's just get through this line, but you are correct. So to correlate va'ani. So how do we judge this? If someone calls to you and you answer, someone calls you, you know, your name and you answer to them, v'lo yodal aduri svara, but you're not quite awake enough that you can answer, you know, like if I were to like pop quiz you guys right now, yeah, guys, what's misnamne mean? And you're like, oh, but what did you just say? So that's what misnamne means. But when they tell you something that you know already, you'll recognize that idea. So someone tells you something, what does Seirugin mean? It's like, Seirugin, yeah, of course I know that. I learned that last week already. So then you are considered awake enough to be Yotze in the Megillah. So yes, Toby points out that that the common interpretation of the Gemara is that it's referring to the person who's actually reading it, which is consistent with the rest of the Mishnah. Though this does apply to a certain degree to one listening as well. The general litmus test to determine if you are paying enough attention, because I mean, I'll just speak for myself again. I've never gone through a Megillah ring where I don't kind of space out, like where it isn't like a lapse for some sec, like 2 seconds here or there. So the trick is, if you're following along with your finger and you're still on the right place when you snap back to it, so then you've been actually paying attention enough that you're a Yotze. But if you all of a sudden you're like, oh, what just happened? And you're like, I have no idea what page we're on. Then you've actually just lost the place and you have to make up those psukim if you can, depending if you're lost or not. Okay, moving forward. Hayakosva dorsha umagia. Im giving libo yatza. So we need to understand what this means in the Mishnah where it says, if a person is writing, is darshaning, and is fixing up the Megillah as he goes along, and he's reading as he's doing all this, he's Yotzei Megillah. So hechi dami, need to come asader psuka ukasavla kiki libo myhavi al pehu. So if he's actually saying the psukim out loud and then writing them down afterwards, that's not going to help because that's called reading by heart, which we've seen in many instances, of course, is problematic. Rather, what's the case of the Mishnah that you're Yotze, where you first write down the Pasuk, then you read it from the Megillah? Ah, you mean Yotze? Does that work either? Halacha, kedivri omer kula. We paskin that you have to read a Megillah only from the beginning to the end. Even those who say that you could read the Megillah from Ish Yehudi, which is the Perek Beis Pasuk A. So even according to that opinion, that you could start from the toward the beginning of the second chapter of the Megillah, you still need a full Megillah, meaning it still needs to be written from Vayihi Me'ah Hashverosh, even if you don't have to start reading from there, because that's considered then as a Shame Megillah. It has a status of a Megillah's Esther if it's written from the beginning to the end. Now, it can even be missing things here and there, as we said, but it still has to start from the beginning and end in the right place as well. So what do we make of this? So what do we make of this then? The issue is that if you are writing down pasuk by pasuk and saying the pasuk out loud, you're not reading from complete Megillah because you're literally in the middle of writing the Megillah. So how do you be able to be doing that? Ella de mancha Megillah kameh ukari lemine psuka psuka ukasav la. Rather, it's how we actually explained the first time around that you have two Megillahs in front of you. One is a complete Megillah, and the second is the Megillah that you are writing. So as you are referencing the already completed Megillah, so you know what to write in the Megillah you're writing, you say the Pasuk out loud from the completed Megillah, and then you write the Pasuk in the uncompleted Megillah. That way, you are Yotze. Sound good? Okay. Lena Masayeli Rarachana, you know, now that we understand the Mishnah this way, that we need to be copying the Hebrew, copying the text from another text. I can't just do it by heart. I can't just do it by memory. This could actually support Rabbi Avarchana. Dama Rabbi Avarchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Osur Lichtov Os Achash Lamin Aksav. One is not allowed to write a sefer by not referencing another. You can't just write it from memory. You have to have another sefer in front of you and reference that when writing it. Dilma, discernly Asur Amuye. That's not such a good proof. Why? Because maybe the Mishnah is just giving me an example. The Mishnah is just saying, oh, and he's copying from another book. Why? Because most people, when you need to write a sefer, you need to write a sefer Torah, you need to write a Megillah, you might have a really good memory, but there's nothing as good as actually having the text in front of you to correct any mistakes you might make. Even the most experienced Baal Kori from time to time will have to be corrected. So it's not an ironclad proof. Nonetheless, the Gemara would like to explore this idea in more depth. Gufa. This is what we just saw. Rabbi Barchana popularized this idea that you're not allowed to write a sefer unless you're referencing it from another sefer. That's where you're transcribing it from. Meisve, but we have a contradiction. But Rabbi Meir, when he went to sanctify the new year in Asya, he saw they didn't have a Megillah there. It was Purim time. And he wrote his own Megillah by heart. So we see that you're allowed to write a Megillah even without referencing an original piece. By the way, one quick little footnote over here, so to speak. Asya is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, some of our friends here, I know a number of you overlap in our Sunday morning Sefer Achinach shiur. So you may remember, all the way almost to the beginning of Sefer Achinach, we learned about the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh and also being the Abra Deshanim, of sanctifying the month and the year. So we learned that it has to be done in Eretz Yisrael. So why is he allowed to do this outside of Eretz Yisrael? Well, we said the idea of doing it in Eretz Yisrael is not just because of Eretz Yisrael, but because the Sanhedrin is sitting in the Lishkas HaGazis. They're sitting up there. The greatest Gedolim, the greatest Talmidei Chacham, the scholars and generation, are located on the Temple Mount there. So once we were sent into exile, and apparently, makes sense, right? Meir is was one of the, you know, Moetzes Gedolei Torah, right? If he was living today, he'd be on the Moetzes Gedolei Torah of the Goods Israel, probably. So since he was one of the highest ranking Rabbanim then, he was able to actually sanctify it outside of Eretz Israel. Just want to throw in that little tidbit over there. Figured we would appreciate that. So, but the question remains, how could Rabbi Meir then transcribe from memory as opposed to from a text? Your eyes will be straight. So Amar Le, Rabbi Bar Chanan, Rabbi Yirmiya, Midifti, Mai Vavapecha, Yashru Negdecha. Amar lo, elu divrei Torah. So this pasuk refers to divrei Torah. Dechsiv bu, hasiv einecha bo. Yeah, actually, let's, 1 second. Asoyif einecha bo. So what does this teach us? That if you just, you all of a sudden, like, you know, blink your eyes, and then it's gone. So you have to be very careful when we pass on the tradition of the Torah. If I blink, if I let my guard down, the Torah could disappear. I could write the wrong words. I can miss a whole pasuk. I could put in by Yomer instead of by Yavo. Anything could happen. But since they were meyusher for him, they were very meyusher for him. We say that they were straight. That was clear in Rabbi Meir's mind. He was able to write it down without having to reference a sefer. We know the issue is we have an account of when Rechista visited Rav Chananel, and Rav Chananel was writing Svarim based on memory alone. Amarle, Rechista says to him, the whole Torah, if only the whole Torah could be written based on your memory alone. But what can we do? The rabbi said, One is not allowed to write even one letter without referencing a sefer in front of him. But the issue here is this contradicts Rabbi Meir's practice, because Rechananel, even though he had such a good memory, he still wasn't allowed to write it based on memory alone. So what gives? Why was Rabbi Meir allowed to write it based on memory alone? Even if you have the best memory, it doesn't matter. Very important concept. It's called a low pluk. Low pluk means when the rabbis make an enactment, they make a gezeirah, they don't, they just give a general blanket, a blanket statement. So you're going to say, oh, I'm really smart. I don't need the rabbis to tell me to do this. It doesn't matter. It's not about the individual. It's about what they thought society needs. And all individuals are included in there. So that's an important concept. So why was Rabbi Meir allowed to break the rule? Well, Rabbi Meir, under regular circumstances, also would be obligated to reference a sefer. But also an important idea, shasar chak shani. There's a difference when we're in what's called a shasar chak, in extenuating circumstances. Rabbi Meir, we had said, there was no Megillah in town. So when we say it's leis breira, you had no other choice but to write the Megillah down. But when you have the ability to reference another sefer, then that is what you should do. Otherwise, we wind up with texts with different girsos and mistakes. And I think it's pretty obvious why it's important to reference an actual sefer. Okay, let me pause for a moment. Any questions?
I was wondering, last week I asked about writing the Megillah in Aramaic and reading in Aramaic. I was wondering if you had a chance to look into that.
Oh, let me... No, my apologies. I didn't actually make it. Let me make a note. Let's see. I don't have any answer offhand, but God willing, I will look into that. Thank you for the reminder, Zadie.
You're welcome.
Okay. Moving on. Abai Shara. How are we doing on time? 7:36, Mechaz 8 o'clock. Okay. Abai Shara Lidve Bar Chav Lemechat Tfilim Azuzah Shlom Enaksa. Now, while we might be strict when it comes to Megillah, when it comes to writing Sifrei Torah, they need a text in front of you. Abaye permitted this family over here. He permitted them to write tefillin and mezuzos based on memory alone. Come on, Kaitana Tanya, right? Yirmiyahu Omer, Rabbeinu, tefillin and mezuzos nechtava shalom and aksav. So Abaye is in accordance with the Braisa, which teaches us that tefillin mezuzos do not need to be written, transcribed from an original text. Bein srichos sirtot, and they don't require sirtot either. Sirtot, again, is you look at a Sefer Torah, you look at a get, you look at certain documents, they have to have the etching, the lines etched in. That ensures that it's quality writing. So generally, we require sirtot. However, we say tefillin mezuzos do not require sirtot. The hilchasa, and so what's our bottom line? Tefillin ain't srichin sirtot. Tefillin does not require sirtot. Mezuzos srichin sirtot. However, mezuzos require sirtot. Why? So let me just explain why. Tefillin, the scrolls are hidden within the batin, right? Within the phylacteries. So since we never see the scrolls, it's okay if they don't have sirtot. Ah, you're going to ask me, but we never see what the mezuzahs look like either, right? Yeah? Okay, I'll ask the question then. If the whole reason I don't need to do sirtut, I don't need to do the etches on the scroll of tefillin, is because no one ever sees the scrolls because they are sewn in nicely into the tefillin itself. So mezuzahs also shouldn't need sirtut because no one ever sees the inside of mezuzah. It's locked and sealed. Yeah? Okay. So the answer is because in theory, the mezuzah is not the case. Oftentimes, we look at the case and we call that the mezuzah, but it's the scroll on the inside that's the mezuzah. In theory, and you know, you'll see this sometimes, when a case is not yet available, people will actually take the scroll and they'll put it, tape it to the door. Now, of course, we try to cover our mezuzahs because we want to protect them. But me'ikar adin, from a strict halachic standpoint, they could be exposed. And therefore, since they could be seen, since they're observable, that's why they would require sirtot. But I'll just finish this piece and then I saw a question. But either way you slice it, it doesn't matter. neither of them need to be written from an original text. Why? My taima, migras garsin, krisin. Because these are things that are written ma'is b'chol yom. It may take an exorbitant amount of time for a sofer to write a sefer Torah, but he could probably write a mezuzah or a tefillin in his sleep. So therefore, that is something that does not require being written from the original text. Also, I would say, people are probably, when you want an authoritative text, people will turn to the Sifrei Torah as an authority. I mean, now we have tikkunim, but back then you would open up a Sefer Torah. You wouldn't open up a mezuzah or tefillin to see how those parshios were written. You would look how a Sefer Torah was written. So that's why it's much more important. Okay. You only got one. Actually, we're going to get to the Mishnah tonight, God willing. Let's get to the Mishnah. Okay, if you remember at the end of our Mishnah, there were a number of different inks, for lack of a better term. I don't know what you call it, the thing that goes ink. There are different kinds of or replacements for ink, as well as paper that is mentioned, things to write on. So what are they? Okay, your guess is as good as mine. Isaac Su of Assam. Sam is Sama. So that is, okay, I had to look up the translation. I don't know what orpiment is, but it's something. Amarav Arachana, Sikra Sashma. And when it comes to Sikra, we say that it's called Sikrasa, which again, I don't know what vermilion is, but okay. Someone could Google all these terms and let us know. Kumus Kuma. Kumus is a sap. Kankantum Charta. And so this is the material, the solution that the shoemakers use when they want to ensure that the shoes are blackened properly. Diftera, what's diftera? It's a kind of parchment, demaliahu kamiach lo ofitz. It's that they treated it with salt and with flour. Honestly, I never knew. Realize that flour and salt were used for these things. You learn new things every day. However, they didn't use, again, I don't know what gold nut is, but again, that's something in the process there. And nayar doesn't refer to paper, that we think of paper, but mechka refers to papyrus, which actually I do know that's like the leaf that they use, right? That was kind of leaf that I think, or that they use in order for writing. So, you know, you look in, like, I think around ancient Egypt, you'll find papyri, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, which is very common for ancient writing. Okay, let's get to the Mishnah. Achei Suba Ashuris. Remember, we have to write the Megillah in Hebrew. Why? Dechsev kichsav amachizmana. Has to be written as it was, the way they wrote it in their time. Al Sefer Dio, why do we use it on a Sefer and with ink? Where do we get the idea that it has to be written with Dio? Suminalan Asya Ksiva Ksiva Gzer Shava. Ksiv Hakha Tikhtav Esther Amalka. So it says that Esther wrote, that's the word of Ksiva. Uksiv Hasam, and in Sefer Yirmiyahu, very relevant for Tisha B'Av, in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Vayomer Lahem Baruch, Mipiv Yikra Eli is called Roma Ela. All these words I present before you, Megillas Echa, was dictated to me by Yirmiyahu. Fani kosev al sefer bidyo, and I am writing on a sefer with ink. So we see, since ink is what's used in the context there for writing, presumably when we say that we have to write the Megillah, it also was written with dyo. It was written with ink as well. So there's our transition from Purim finally to Tisha B'Av. All right, let me share with you guys a very interesting halakhic question from Rav Zilberstein, and we'll wrap up with that. There's a machlokus in Rishonim. What happens if you are davening Shmoneh Esrei, you have a lot of kavana, and then all of a sudden the assistant rabbi doesn't give you enough time, and he waves the chazan to go ahead, and the chazan gets up to kedusha while you're still davening Shmoneh Esrei. So what do you do? So there, we paskin, Mishbura says that what you do is you finish the bracha that you're in the middle of, you pause, and you listen to Kedusha, and your yotze was shomea ka'ona. Your yotze, that by you listening, it's as if you're saying it. The issue is, I think Tosfos takes issue with this, if I recall correctly. is because you want to, it's like you want to have your cake and eat it. Mimonoshach. Either it's by listening to Kedusha, it's as if I'm saying it. Well, if it's as if I'm reciting Kedusha, it should be a hefsik in my Shemona Esrei. And if it's not good enough, if it doesn't reach a threshold that constitutes an interruption in my Shemona Esrei, then is that really considered good enough to be Yotzei Kedusha? Nonetheless, we say that's all right. And so the question is as follows. Let's say, what if I'm middle Shemona Esrei and then they get up to Kriyas Megillah? Okay, you know, somehow just imagine that scenario happens. Okay, could happen, right? So you're middle Shemona Esrei and then they get up to Megillah reading. So this is like a wacky case over here. Can I listen and be Yotze? So he suggests, or Zilberstein suggests, he says, he quotes from the Shas HaTshuvos Har Tzvi, a similar question. Let's say they get up to Havdalah on Saturday night, and I'm a middle Shemona Esrei. Can I be Yotzei Havdalah? So he says that you shouldn't do it lichadchila, but there is something called a mitzvah overis, that if the mitzvah, you're going to miss the opportunity, so then you're allowed to pull off this trick. You're not allowed to do lichadchila, but I'm going to miss Kedusha. Kedusha is going to be recited. I'm not going to have another chance to hear it. I'm not going to have a chance to make Havdalah afterwards, okay. Question is, what about Megillah? Megillah could really go either way. On the one hand, you could say, I could always read Megillah later if I'm able to. If I know how to read Megillah and I own my own Megillah, I could just read it at home later. On the other hand, you could say, if this is the only Megillah reading that's happening tonight, so then that could be considered a mitzvah veris. Why? Because it's true, I might be able to read the Megillah later that night on my own, but then the yasid is a mila shel shmias Megillah bit sibor, but I'm going to be missing the element of hearing Megillah with the congregation. And we learned, even though in general mitzvos are supposed to be done, Rava Mahadras Melech, are supposed to be done publicly, especially when it comes to Megillah, we have a mitzvah of Persumei Nisa. And so if I only lean it on my own later, maybe that's like a mitzvah veris. Maybe that's a missed opportunity there. And I should actually listen in middle Shemona Esrei. The issue is, this gets to the sugya more from last week, it takes longer to hear the Megillah than it does to daven Shemona Esrei. So over the time that I'm hearing the Megillah, I would then have to start Shemona Esrei all over again. Remember, because we pass like Ramona, that if too much time passes, then I have to start from the beginning again. So what do I do? So Silverstein says, here's the trick. Here's the shtick you could pull off. I mean, by the way, this is going to be the most painful Megillah read. Like, imagine you're middle of Shemona Esrei. You have to hear the whole Megillah while you're standing in Shemona Esrei mode. But in theory, if you want to pull it off, this is what you can do. Veneer the Becholzos im Yachla Chol Lomar Kama Tevas Me'atfila. Okay, fine. This is what you do. Yazakak Desha Hesiglo Ye Yosemide Ligmoris Kol Atfila. You know what you can do? Like, when people bang during Haman, then say the next bracha of Shemona Esrei. And at the next bang, I'm going to say next bracha. That way, you keep the clock keeps resetting every single time you say a little bit of Shemona Esrei. I've had to do something like this where I've accidentally gone too far in Birchos Kriya Shema. Like the shul was like just having like a really enjoyable Kel Adon Shabbos morning, and like I just like absentmindedly like went ahead of everyone, and I'm like, oh, now I have to like really slowly say the rest of Birchos Kriya Shema. That way they can catch up, and I don't have too long of a hefsek. These are the challenges I have to deal with. For those of you who actually keep pace properly, you don't need to worry. All right, Shkoyach, everyone, thank you for coming. Really good showing, good to learn together, and wishing you all a good Shabbos, as well as
thank you, Rabbi,
a manageable and meaningful fast for those who are doing it.
Thank you.
I guess I'll see you at the movies on Tisha B'Av.
Thank you.
All right, take care, everyone.
Good night, good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.